This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. Much has been written about the disappearing shade tree mechanic. Newer cars rely on computers to do everything from operate to tune the radio dial. There are still automobile enthusiasts, however, that relish cars that require just a bit of knowledge, a wrench, and a screwdriver to fix. This month, owners of British sports cars brought their automobiles to the area for a rally and to pop open the hood and do a bit of work. Ozarks at Large's Pete Hartman was there.
English-styled golfing caps and full beards were the fashion of the day as the British Iron Touring Club of Northwest Arkansas presented its third annual Brit in the Ozarks car show earlier this month. Even the weather, with gray threatening cloud cover, seemed to evoke thoughts of English countryside as seen from the coupe of an open-air roadster.
You don't drive in England without it raining.
Bill Ranke of Reed Spring, Missouri, shows off his Lotus 7.
This looks like a pretty small sports car.
Well, this is a British sports roadster built at the Lotus factory. They were made primarily to run around the English countryside, and our troops over there found out how spunky they were. They brought them to the United States, where they were put into racing, primarily with Sports Car Club of America. They were so quick that even SCCA had a very difficult time determining what class to put them in.
Ranke's Lotus 7, now retired, has seen over 12 years of vintage car racing circuits, and Ranke says he's even turned four laps at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway.
This little Lotus 7 loves the Ozark roads. 0-60 in 5 seconds. The engine is originally is a 1498cc Ford Cosworth engine. Push rod, non-cross flow, dynos at 132 horsepower with 128 foot-pound of torque. The car's only 1,170 pounds.
Okay. All that means it goes really, really fast. And with using 112 octane fuel at $5 a gallon, Ranke doesn't do many Sunday excursions with this car. But there are many cars here that do see regular use. In fact, there's a mantra within British car circles. Drive the car.
This one's, fast enough to go on the interstate without any problem.
Charles Hill drove his 1964 Morgan Plus 4 from Kansas City. And this car, with its rear sloping fenders and open cockpit, is likely what would come to mind when someone thinks of an early sports car.
It's basically the same car as they started building in 1936. This one over here, that one is 1953. The maroon and green one. It's got, the grille and the front fenders are different, but outside of that, they're pretty much basically the same car. They're just fun to drive, and they're simple. Anybody can work on one. It's not like the computerized cars nowadays that, anybody with basic mechanical knowledge can work on one.
The simplicity of these British-made cars seems to be the common answer to the question of why they are so popular. Bill Watkins agrees with that reasoning. Bill is president of the British Touring Club of Northwest Arkansas. You can learn more about them at britishironnwa.org. Bill and others with the club began the Brit in the Ozarks show 3 years ago. It benefits the Razorback chapter of the Muscular Dystrophy Association.
If somebody visualizes a sports car, they typically are going to think of, bring a picture up in their mind of some 60s British sports car, some kind of a Triumph, some kind of an MG, or if they have high aspirations, maybe a beautiful Jaguar E-Type. That's typically the vision somebody has of a sports car. They really kind of had a corner on the market until they just blew it and essentially no longer have a native automobile industry in England. You get in a British car, whether it's a sports car or a sedan, and you have leather, you have wood. It's like sitting in a library or a drawing room. And you just don't see that kind of character in very many cars.
Bill owns two British sports cars, a 1965 Jaguar sedan and a 1962 Triumph TR4 convertible. A rather small car, really small for Bill, who stands 6 feet, 8 inches tall.
With my size, it's a little bit of a challenge, but I do manage to shoehorn into it. They call it the Shrine Circus car when I'm getting out of the Triumph.
Doug Nelson from the Little Rock British Car Club also owns a Triumph TR4, a 1963 model. He bought the car in 1979 and estimates that he's logged over 100,000 miles in the sky blue two-seater.
We're pretty much involved in a consumer society where we've got a lot of disposable stuff. and our new cars that we buy are eventually disposable. We get rid of them and get another one. Here you've got something that some fair amount of thought went into the design and the craftsmanship, and this is something that you can hang on to and work on yourself. You don't have two dozen sensors that are telling a computer what to do. What you've got are very straightforward, like carburation and ignition systems. Most all of the work on this car, well, all of it, I can do myself, from the engine to the paint job. So there's an allure there, being able to be a participant instead of a spectator as far as your transportation goes.
One of the most impressive cars of the day was that of a true Englishman, now by way of Kansas City, Colin Davidson, standing beside his pristine 1951 Jaguar XK120, says he sometimes doesn't understand why anyone outside of Great Britain could be so consumed with these sports cars.
Well, you're asking the wrong person, because I'm from England, and I grew up with these. So, and I mean, there's nothing wrong with American cars, but I never grew up with them, so it's not the same. My cousins had these as they were older than me, and they had these as, in England as kids, and I always wanted one, so ended up living here, and I've got one. So.
How long have you had it?
I've only had this 2 years, this one.
Colin's Jaguar was housed in a museum for a few years before he purchased it, and it shows. But that doesn't mean Colin trailers the Jag from show to show. He says he has no reservations about driving this most classic of British sports cars.
Some people have a really great-looking car. They'll trailer it everywhere. It never moves. But my mind says, however nice a car, you got to drive them.
For Ozarks at Large, I'm Pete Hartman.
They're real easy to work on, simple to get at. And even if the engine was rubbish, I just love the look of it. It's like a piece of art, I think. You know.
And from cars that owners consider a work of art when they come off the assembly line, to cars that owners consider a canvas waiting to become art.
We even take this to like some street ride shows and stuff, and a lot of them guys are real touchy about their cars, and you know, I believe it's a car to have fun with.
Doug Hodges of Kansas City is standing over, really, his BMW Isetta 300. It's a boxy, multicolored, ultra subcompact car that weighs less than 800 pounds. Hodges' small car, with 14 different colors of paint compressed over its small frame, is an art car. Hodges discovered the body in disrepair in a Kansas City suburb, installed a new engine, and then spent more than 60 hours painting. He says his wife calls the car a pigment of his imagination. He brought the car to Fayetteville this month for an art car rally, a gathering of vehicles with unique paint jobs, props, computers, and in one case, an actual rolling museum inside. The Fayetteville Art Car Rally has been the dream for some time for Gary Hoover, an art car owner himself.
An art car is sort of, you know, it's any car that someone has taken and for whatever reason painted it, sculpted it, glued things on it. I guess you're sort of breaking that taboo of, instead of having a car that you polish and shine and you clean, all of a sudden it's like, I'm going to do something with it for whatever reason. Everyone seems to have different motivations. And I don't know, I guess it's people who just aren't scared to mess with their car.
Hoover's art car, a familiar sight in northwest Arkansas, is an Oldsmobile turned into the Beatles' yellow submarine. It's yellow, of course, and it has a periscope and other submarine paraphernalia. Like other art car owners, though, he doesn't stop on the outside. Inside are all sorts of tributes to John, Paul, George, and Ringo. Gary says his inspiration came from a love of the Beatles' animated movie and his ownership of an aging sedan.
And in fact, when I did the Blue Book deduction for mileage, I owed Oldsmobile $1,800. So my wife had a music student that just turned 16. I thought, well, I'll just give her the car. She didn't want it. So if I'm ever going to do a real art car, now's my chance. And I've had it for 5 years. I've driven back and forth to Texas with it. I've been to Omaha several times. I'm going to have to keep it running. I'm having too much fun with it.
Other than a creative streak, there really isn't a common trait among the art car enthusiasts at the Fayetteville Rally. There's an engineer, a couple of teachers, a construction worker, and a retired military officer. And there are really no rules for the cars. One had every inch covered with toys, army men, Lego blocks, you name it. The Walkers of Omaha, Pete and Christine, drove their vintage Cadillac ambulance down to Fayetteville. It's a mobile mural, an airbrushed landscape from headlight to back fin, dedicated to the Earth's future.
Atop we have an alien in his chamber, kind of dreaming of the future of the Earth. And what the car is representing Earth in the future, where it's mostly underwater and mechanical. And so you'll see images of mechanical fish in the underwater with an underwater city, and the future will have more alien life forms, and that's where you see the alien spaceships and then all the neighboring planets up above, being this is Earth.
Richard Carter's art car, the Sashimi Tabernacle Choir, always draws a large crowd. Remember the singing Billy Bass novelty gift from a few Christmas seasons back? Carter's car is likely the only vehicle with more than 250 mechanical fish attached. And not just Billy Bass. Apparently there was a cottage industry of singing trout, sharks, catfish, even lobsters.
Well, years ago I was walking through a store around Christmas and I saw one of those annoying singing fish going away, and I was thinking, you know, that's really annoying. And then I realized, if one of them's that annoying, how annoying could 250 be? And at that point, it kind of took over my life. I knew I had to do it. Fortunately, a lot of my friends joined in, and it took over their lives, too. So at one point or another, at least 30 people have worked on this car.
Each fish is attached to the side, top, or hood of the car. Carter, who lives in Houston, has more than a dozen tunes programmed into his car so the Sashimi Tabernacle Choir fish can gyrate and flip in sync. Each song has its own choreography. This sort of performance requires 5 miles of wire from the backs of the fish into the trunk, 2 golf cart batteries, and 1 car battery supply the power.
Back up in the cab, we've got 2 different computers that run the choreography and the sound. They send the signals back to the trunk, and the trunk electronics amplify it and send it up to all the individual fish.
All of those mechanics and electronics produce a startlingly complex show. For Handel's Hallelujah Chorus, a motorized lobster serves as conductor, emerging from the top of the car on a mechanical plank to hover over the hood and wave a baton in its claw.
Hallelujah, hallelujah, hallelujah,
there are 2 drawbacks for maintaining such a complicated car. One, the mechanical sophistication involved means the fish car is, ironically, not waterproof. And 2, the Billy Bass fad has passed.
But of course, we never have enough spare parts. Any of your listeners who want to donate fish to us should visit our website and send us their fish.
Art cars could likely be described as folk art. And at least one car at the Fayetteville Art Car Rally was an actual museum honoring folk art. Erica Nelson of Lucas, Kansas, calls her van
the world's largest collection of the world's smallest versions of the world's largest things, traveling roadside attraction and museum.
Inside are tiny models made by Nelson of the world's largest things. If a town in the Midwest claims to have the world's largest popcorn ball, Nelson makes a little version, puts it on display. She says the devotion to the world's largest things for her began when she was a child.
I started getting interested whenever I was about 3 and 4 years old, when my dad would take us up to Bemidji, Minnesota. We'd go visit Paul Bunyan and Babe the Blue Ox. Then when I was 5, I moved to the town next to the world's largest 8-ball in Tipton, Missouri. And I thought, well, everybody has a world's largest thing. And that's how I started navigating. Then I found out that, no, not everybody does. And it just started becoming an obsession.
Erica says she takes great care in creating the world's smallest replicas of the world's largest things. She never creates one until she's seen the actual giant firsthand. So if you step inside the van and look at the replicas, you see not just any tiny version of the world's largest otter, but a painstakingly accurate replica.
The reason that I started with the replicas is that the souvenirs that were available at some of these world's largest things, I kept thinking, oh, well, I could do better than that. So, once I've seen the world's largest thing, I make a replica as close as possible. And if it's a strawberry, I want it to look like the big strawberry. And I try to get the presentation the same. I try to build the same scaffolding up and get the signage the same. So, it takes a while to do each replica, and I'm at least 50 replicas behind myself. Because I cannot make a replica until I've seen it myself, because I think that's cheating.
Erica Nelson says the best part of her artistic quest is returning to the actual world's largest things and showing the curators her models. During her stay here, she returned to Alma to show off her just-completed replica of the world's largest can of spinach.
Because it's a beautiful can of spinach, and I just got that replica done about 3 weeks ago. And then I will go off to Catoosa, Oklahoma to visit the world's largest blue whale, because I also just finished that replica and want to do some meta photos of them together.
You can learn more about Erica Nelson's art car and replicas at worldslargestthings.com. And you can see Richard Carter's fish car at ShashimiTabernacleChoir.org. And one of the region's largest art car rallies in Omaha is at CentralArtCarExhibit.com. And if you'd like to begin making your own art car, Gary Hoover has this advice.
Whatever inspiration you have, just start doing something. A lot of cars change as they go through time. I did mine initially and thought I was done. People said, oh, you know, it's never done. I went, yeah, right. And they're right. I find myself going into Toys R Us. I go to flea markets. I get on eBay. Now that the Yellow Submarine movie has been re-released, all sorts of merchandise has showed up. So, of course, I have to start getting that and stick it on the car somewhere. So I would just say that for anyone wanting to do an art car, just, you know, follow your imagination wherever it may take you.
This is Ozarks at Large. Cars and radio have a natural relationship. We know that much of the listening you do is while in the car. The fact that we're portable is one of the advantages to radio. Just think, you can be driving to Fort Smith from Berryville and listening to stories from the Buffalo River or downtown Bentonville. If you appreciate that portable nature of Ozarks at Large, why not use your phone, mobile or otherwise, to show your appreciation? Ozarks at Large benefits greatly and directly from your financial support. Thanks for calling. Here are the numbers.